So, I thought I would begin this evening with a poem. And it's by Rebecca Baggett, and she wrote it for her daughters. It's entitled Testimony. I want to tell you that the world is still beautiful. I tell you that despite children raped on city streets, shot down in schoolrooms, despite the slow poison seeping from old and hidden sins into our air, soil, water, despite the thinning film that encloses our aching world. Despite my own terror and despair, I want you to look again and again, to recognize the tender grasses curled like a baby's fine hairs around your fingers as a recurring miracle, to see the river rocks shine like God, that the crisp voices of the orange and gold October leaves are laughing at death. I want you to look beneath the grass, to note the fragile hieroglyphs of ant, snail, beetle. I want you to understand that you are no more and no less necessary than the brown recluse, the ruby-throated hummingbird, the humpback whale, the profligate mimosa. I want to say, like Neruda, that I am waiting for a great and common tenderness, that I still believe we are capable of attention, that anyone who notices the world must want to save it. I want to tell you that the world is still beautiful. Despite my own terror and despair, we live on this fulcrum of love and loss right now. The impact of greed, hatred, and delusion is evident every time we turn on the news. Just today in the Supreme Court decision of West Virginia versus the EPA. This ruling that limits quite severely the government's ability to regulate harmful emissions. Sometimes it feels like practice, at least for me, has become centered on this inquiry: how do I live in this world? How do we live in this world, particularly in light of what's happening to the earth. With all the tenderness, all the tragedy, and all the mystery and the magnificence. And we're offered this amazing map in this practice, aren't we? For how to live in this world. And it's such a gift. I feel grateful on a daily basis for this path, for this practice. And each week, you, like sanghas around the country, around the world, explore some dimension of this map to the human heart and mind, right? And how it might interface with the world. So, this evening, I'd like to explore with you a dimension of practice that's really near and dear to my heart. To explore how we can be supported in the face of some of the ecological and environmental realities that are unfolding, with a flexible and a responsive and resilient heart that is engaged. You know, the world so needs our engagement. So how do we nourish ourselves to be able to show up in this world, to actually really live in this world? Some of you have probably heard of eco-dharma. It's a term that's appearing more and more in teachings and in Buddhist communities as an emerging form of engaged Buddhism. You know, that's offering us ways of being awake and supported while living in this precious and precarious world, you know, to support not only our own resiliency, but the resiliency of communities and perhaps, hopefully, you know, the resiliency of the planet. And you know, I say emerging, an emerging form of practice, and you know, in so many ways it's not new. Connection with the earth, with nature practice has been a part of Buddhism since the time of the Buddha. Right? The Buddha sat under the Bodhi tree and woke up, right? And monks practice in the forests. They did then, and in many places they still do. And many of you may practice in nature. You know, whether it's the nature of looking out your window or sitting in your yard or maybe in a park or in the wilderness. And present circumstances are inviting an exploration, a discovery of, you know, what is eco-dharma in these times? You know, what is it? What could it be? And I don't have the answer. You know, eco-dharma is spoken of in many different ways. But I really value the inquiry. What is eco-dharma? How might this serve? So I thought this evening I would share one of the ways that I've come to hold this practice of eco-dharma. Yeah, that emerges out of my own personal practice and also out of the experience of sitting with people, with students, with clients. And that's holding eco-dharma in the context of the two wings of practice that we frequently talk about. The wing of awareness. Eco-dharma is the courageous, clear seeing of what is happening to the earth. Oh, it's like this. Global heating, extreme weather, wildfires, aridification of land, fracking, species extinction, court battles, ecological devastation. Oh, it's like this. It's like this. And then there's the wing of care, the heart qualities that we bring to what is here. Compassion, kindness, appreciation, joy. Yeah. Ecodharma is being in relationship. Relationship with reverence, I would say. Reverence for the interconnected web of life that we all belong to. It's a recognition of what Thich Nhat Hanh describes as interbeing. Yeah. And it's being responsive to what's here, to what's calling for care. So it's being in responsive relationship. If I were to distill Ecodharma into one word, it would be love. Ecodharma is love. And love is a verb. Love is action. Love is engagement. Love is how we live in this tender world. And there's many ways of practicing with these two wings of awareness and care. And tonight I want to share just two access points that allow for an intimacy with these two wings. Starting with the wing of care, and that's very intentional, actually, to begin with the wing of care and to begin with the care of our own hearts. You know, to start right here. Because in these challenging times, we have to cultivate a resiliency of heart so that we can be resourced enough to see clearly, to open up to the pain, so we don't collapse into overwhelm and disengagement. So we start with the love. And one way of enlivening this wing of care is to become a connoisseur of beauty. Yeah, I imagine those of you who frequent this circle may have heard James speak of beauty in direct or indirect terms. You know, I know that it's a quality that, you know, he values the nourishment, the sources of support that we can have through these heart qualities. And, you know, what I would say is there's probably not a whole lot that's new in what I'm going to be saying this evening. And one of the beauties, I think, of this practice is repetition, right? So you can let these words water what you already know in your heart, and maybe there'll be a new seed or two planted that might sprout at some point. One of my fellow Buddhist eco-chaplains, Catherine Harrell, has a practice which I love that she shared with a group of us maybe a year and a half ago. And it's simply asking herself every day, what is beautiful in your life? What is beautiful in your life? And I picked up this practice and have been exploring it for the last year and a half. And you know, in that opening practice, with just that little bit of guidance at the beginning, it was an invitation to consider, to invite in a connection with beauty. The headlines tell a grim story, often of the hateful or the horrific things that humans are capable of, the limits, the losses. And the headlines tell a story that's partial. Simultaneously, there are millions of acts of kindness, immeasurable moments of beauty in each day around the globe. And it's really important to notice that, to find a way of accessing the beauty and the kindness that's available. We can sip these moments like nectar, letting the heart wander like a honeybee from beauty to beauty. And, like a bee, the invitation is to really immerse in these moments, to be in full contact with them. I was on a walk earlier this week along, there's an irrigation ditch near where I live, along some open space. And right now the wild roses are particularly beautiful. And I came across this glorious bumblebee on the wild roses. And I just love bumblebees. They are an aerodynamic wonder to me. And what really struck me about this particular bee was like the enthusiasm and the devotion to each and every blossom it landed on. There was such intimacy, full body contact for just a few moments, which was enough to gather the pollen and to carry the goodness with them to the next blossom. And it really moved me. And it reminded me of one of my favorite practices that also supports a drinking in of beauty. It's a practice from Rick Hansen from his book, Hardwiring Happiness. And some of you may be familiar with Rick. I know he's a well-known teacher and also a psychologist. And you may even know this practice, but again, repetition, right? Repetition helps us remember these practices that we know, and we often, they fall by the wayside. So his practice, HEAL, the acronym HEAL, which utilizes our neurobiology to activate and install the good stuff, right? So the H, have a positive experience. Notice a positive experience that's arising in your life and really open to feeling good. To let yourself have this experience. Often we skim right over these positive experiences, like skipping a stone across a pond. We don't drop in and immerse ourselves in it. So first is to have a positive experience, and then the E, to enrich it, to stay with the positive experience, 10 to 20 seconds, doesn't have to be long. This is like the full body contact with the positive moment, to sense it in the body, to intensify it. And then the A, to absorb it, to let the experience sink in so you can carry it with you, like the pollen, It's like we're really picking up the crystals of goodness and carrying them with us. And then the L is optional, It stands for linking positive and negative material. It's like when a positive experience is in the foreground, you might open, even lightly, to a more negative or difficult experience in the background, to hold them both simultaneously. So in the context of ecodharma, you know, this might be as you connect with the beauty of birdsong, you know, sitting there listening to the birds in the morning, feeling perhaps the expansion, the appreciation for the wonder of it. You might also let your heart just open even a little bit to the vulnerability. Oh, you know, the impact. You know, ecosystems are being threatened, and the well-being of the habitat of these birds may not be so intact. So it's both and both and is a key ingredient, you know, a key ingredient to well-being. And if in opening to linking, it somehow pulls you out of all the goodness, let it go, you know, and just come back to the positive. That's why it's optional. It's a place to stretch the heart. So I might actually invite us to pause here for a moment to just experience a reflection that allows us to try this on, drinking in beauty, maybe even having, enhancing, absorbing, and linking a positive moment. So you might just pause here, sitting in a way that's comfortable. You don't have to change your posture. You might find it helpful to soften the gaze or close the eyes for a few moments and just take a few deeper breaths. Exhaling all these words. Just feeling the body and opening to this inquiry of what is beautiful in your life? What is beautiful in your life? Maybe it's a relationship. Maybe it's something in the natural world that you love and appreciate. Something that you can access through memory or imagination in this moment. Or maybe it's something that's available to you through your senses right now. Feeling the cool evening breeze through the window, or hearing birds or crickets. Touching into and allowing yourself to have a moment of beauty. A pleasant moment, a positive experience. And staying with it, enhancing it, enlivening it, calling in sounds or sights, a felt sense of this experience, letting it come to life in the body. And absorbing it, staying with it, savoring, soaking it in. Letting it nourish you. And as this is here in the foreground of this moment, you might just lightly, almost as if through peripheral vision, see if there can be a gentle, just touching in to the tenderness, the vulnerability, maybe the more challenging related to this moment. There might be a sense of how that feels in the body, and maybe even a sense of how is it to hold both and. And if the balance can't be held, just let go of the tenderness and come back to that which is beautiful, pleasant, positive. Taking another breath or two. And maybe gifting your body a little gentle stretch if it likes as you release this practice, and letting your awareness come back into the space that we're sharing. And I might just invite, even in chat if you like, maybe just, you know, a word or two or a sentence of what did you notice in touching into a blossom of beauty for a moment? Could you feel it in your body? And I'll just see if there's anything that anyone wants to share before we continue. Sounds of the birds, beautiful. And, you know, how was it to drink that in? Was it nourishing or calming? Maybe there's even like one word that describes how you feel right now. Softening. Yeah, beautiful. Alive and tender, calm, unfamiliar, happy. Yeah. Thank you. You know, often in the experience of beauty, there can arise, you know, a sense of expansion. You know, expansion of the heart through some of these beautiful qualities you're naming. Peacefulness, appreciation, gratitude, belonging, awe, wonder, delight, love, you know, a sense of care. To see beauty, we have to attend, we have to attune. We have to be in relationship with the world. And when we're attuned, when we're in relationship, when we're resourced through something like beauty, we're more able to see clearly. We're more able to turn toward that wing of awareness. You know, there's a quality of resilience that can arise. One of my favorite books is The Dictionary, and Webster's defines resilience in two ways. It's the ability of something to return to its original size and shape after being compressed or deformed. And it's the ability to recover from or adjust to adversity or change. So when we're resourced, there's more resilience. There's the capacity for return and for recovery. You know, our precious hearts are being compressed and deformed almost on a daily basis by what's happening out there. And they have this tremendous capacity to adapt, to find their shape. One of the practices with this wing of awareness that I have found that invites courageous, clear seeing related to the earth are the five remembrances. And I believe that James gave a talk on these not that long ago, and some of you may have been there. And for those of you who maybe didn't hear that talk or who are not familiar with the practice of the five remembrances, I'll just briefly introduce what they are, and then I'll share the languaging that I've been playing with for quite a while now around ecodharma. So the five remembrances, sometimes they're known as the five recollections, are a beautiful practice that's a way of meeting and holding the vulnerability and the impermanence that's common to all of us. The experiences of aging, illness, dying, and loss. You know, and there's many different phrases that are used. Typically, they're practiced. This is a practice of recitation and reflection. So through a series of five phrases, we invite in and an intimacy with impermanence. And there are many phrases. This is my favorite phrasing of this practice. And the modification that I've made over the last few years related to practicing with what's happening to the earth. So this earth body is of the nature to age. There's no way to escape aging. This earth body is of the nature to grow ill. There's no way to escape illness. This earth body is of the nature to die. There's no way to escape dying. Everyone and everything I love on earth is of the nature to change. There's no way to escape separation. My actions are my only true belongings. There's no way to escape the consequences of my actions. They are the ground upon which I stand. And this is a version that comes from the Metta Institute and Frank Ostaseski, with the modification of earth body. And this practice is really a way of opening to impermanence in ever-widening circles, you know, to bear witness to the nature of things coming together and falling apart on a scale of a human life or on the scale of eons in geologic time. And I've been discovering an inclusivity in this phrasing that's been really rich. You know, this earth body points to this earth body, this human body right here. You know, so much of our suffering is in this sense of separation, you know, like somehow we're separate from the earth, or we're separate from nature, but we are earth, we are nature. So, you know, this earth body and this earth body, the planetary body, both subject to impermanence, and it's not a mistake. And so much of our suffering is also related to it feeling like a mistake. Was recently on a family, short family vacation to one of our favorite mountain towns, and driving home, we drove through the Poudre Canyon here in Colorado. And 2 years ago, the Colorado experienced two of its largest wildfires, the East Troublesome Fire and the Cameron Pass fire. And the Poudre Canyon is anchored between Cameron Pass and the town of Fort Collins. And this stretch of about 65, 70 miles of canyon burned nearly in its entirety. You know, the entire length of the canyon, this is a beloved canyon in my life, the last 25 plus years. And it's not my first time that I've driven the canyon since the fires, but I was just really could feel the visceral impact and the sense of like, God, I can't believe this happened. This shouldn't have happened. This, you know, that energy of no in the body and the pain of it. And I found myself in, you know, sort of silently in my mind and my heart, just visiting some of these remembrances. Oh, this earth body is of the nature, you know, to grow ill. There's no way to escape illness. So as I'm looking up the mountains, even the parts that haven't burned, you know, there's these vast swaths of mountainside that you can see the dead or dying forests, the pine beetle kill, which is part of what's fueling these massive fires. And it's like, oh, illness, you know, and this earth body is of the nature to die. And everything I love is of the nature to change, and there's no way to escape separation. And you know, it allows a way of leaning into, you know, this this loss. We live on this fulcrum of love and loss. You know, when we touch the love, we can touch the loss. We can open to this wing of awareness. And when we touch the loss, we're touching the love. You know, the deep pain of driving through that canyon, the loss is really a reflection of how much love there is. You know, all these decades of hiking there and loving the beings and the wildflowers and the lakes and the trails and the memories. It's like, oh, you know, it's like this, and it hurts. It hurts, but it's not permanent, you know. The earth is not permanent. The pain is also not permanent. It moves and it shifts. And I want to offer just a few reflections for a few minutes on grief, because grief is part of how we live in and with this world. You know, this question, how do I live in this world? Well, we live in this world with grief. And grief is often talked about like it's somehow a feeling, an emotion. But In my experience, grief is a multifaceted, multidimensional experience of body, mind, and heart that's complex and it's ongoing. It includes such a wide array of experiences such as sadness, heartbreak, anxiety, fear, anger, overwhelm, hopelessness, helplessness, sometimes despair or denial, sorrow, depression, guilt, regret, disappointment, relief, acceptance, hope, meaning making. Grief is not just one thing, and it's not just one end of the emotional spectrum. And it's not something we get over. It's something that we accompany. We come into relationship with grief and with ourselves as the one who's grieving. Another poem that actually just so beautifully speaks to this. By Albert Hufstickler, entitled The Cure. We think we get over things. We don't get over things. Or say, we get over the measles, but not a broken heart. We need to make that distinction. The things that become part of our experience never become less a part of our experience. How can I say it? The way to get over a life is to die. Short of that, you move with it. Let the pain be pain, not in the hope that it will vanish, but in the faith that it will fit in, find its place in the shape of things, and be then not any less pain, but true to form. Because anything natural has an inherent shape and will flow towards it. And a life is as natural as a leaf. That's what we're looking for. Not the end of a thing, but the shape of it. Wisdom is seeing the shape of your life without obliterating or getting over a single instant of it. So that's what we're looking for. Not the end of a thing, but the shape of it. How does grief fit into our life? How does loss fit into our life? How does the shape of what's happening to the earth fit into our life? And we don't have to hold our grief alone. We can draw on the support of community, friends, sangha, and the community of the more than human world. We can be in relationship with the earth itself related to our grief about what's happening to the earth. The earth can be a resource, a support for us. In 2013 in Colorado, we experienced a 500-year flood in the Front Range, and it devastated a number of small foothills or mountain communities. And I was fortunate enough to have the opportunity to support people. Through the United Way Recovery Fund as on their healing journeys. And I just felt so privileged to have a small window into the healing process of individuals in the community. And one of the beautiful examples of collective healing that was a partnering with the land was the creation of a labyrinth down near the confluence of the river, two of the rivers that came together and really contributed to the flooding. And the labyrinth is still there. You know, it's hard to believe it's been almost a decade. And the labyrinth is alive and engaged with. It's dynamic and evolving. It's an ongoing relationship between the land and individuals and the land and the community. There's offerings that come and go, you know, notes and art installations, and it's a gathering place. It represents, it is a relationship with grief, a living relationship with grief. Just a few more reflections, and then we'll pause for a little time for comments. How do we live in this world? You know, we live rooted and reaching out. We live resilient and also raw. A few years ago, I was on a retreat at the Ecodharma Center, and part of the retreat was a two-day solo out in the woods, and I happened to be sick, and so I didn't have a lot of energy, and I didn't go very far, and I didn't move very much, and most of my solo was actually me sitting on the ground with my back against a tree for hours, and I could feel the steadiness and the quiet of the ground and the intensity and the movement of the wind through the trunk of the tree. And it felt like a Dharma transmission of how to live and be rooted and flexible at the same time. Again, that energy of both and that the L in heal points to. You know, how to be with and hold the beauty and the bereavement, the love and the loss. So I'll just close with a reflection on the fifth remembrance. You know, that my actions are my only true belongings. There is no way to escape the consequence of my actions. They are the ground upon which I stand. And this fifth remembrance points us to wise and loving engagement. You know, we're not called to defeat or despair or giving up. We're invited to live with Kalyanamitta, beautiful karma. What is the beautiful action to take in the face of climate destabilization? You know, how do we care for ourselves, each other, all our more than human relations, the earth body? You know, love is a verb, love is action. And as Anjali's Aryan says, action ameliorates anxiety. So we're called to, as Joanna Macy says, walk in beauty and bewilderment, and I might add bereavement. We're invited to meet the world with open eyes and an open heart to take it all in. The goodness, the grace, the grief. So what is the beautiful action you will take? So let's just pause for a few moments. offering the energy, the goodness, the beauty of our gathering together tonight for the well-being of all beings. This precious planet. May all beings be nourished, free, and loved. I'll just pause. I know we have just a few minutes and see if anyone has comments, questions. You're welcome to express them in chat. And I apologize for the default being set to chat to, that you haven't been seeing that. So I'll try to adjust the settings. We'll see if that did it. Yeah, the last poet, Albert Huff Stickler. And the poem was entitled The Cure. It's lovely to be with each of you, and my wish for you is that your life, your days this week are nourished by moments of beauty, and that it provides a reservoir of resiliency that you can, love and live in this world. Please.
I'm all about, how beautiful things are. I went for a walk today and there are gardens around my neighborhood. I live in a relatively modest neighborhood, but every once in a while there's a spectacular garden and I'm with it. And every year I go to the Sierra for 10 days and I hike around. However, here comes the downside. Put your helmet on. Last night, I was watching this thing eating our way to extinction with my godson. And it's pretty clear by pretty smart scientists that unless all the humans on the planet become a vegan, we're not going anywhere. Now, I've been a vegan for 52 years. I'm not tooting my horn, but all I'm saying is, I don't think the smart money is really on the humans pulling this off, So, anyway, thank you for listening.
I
I mean, I
see.
hope they do. I love the Sierra. I love the giant redwood trees. I love the gardens, but it doesn't look to me like the vegans are going to pull it off. I mean, the humans are going to pull it off. Anyway, thank you.
Well, you know, Phil, this talk is really sort of one facet of so many elements of this very complex experience of living in this time and this with this earth. So I just so appreciate you bringing this in, and you know, and the truth is, we may be very likely on our way to extinction in the near term or in the not so far term, and there will be beauty till the end, and will our actions of engagement save the species or save the planet? I don't know. Will it make a difference to the beings we encounter along the way? I really do firmly believe that going out with more kindness and love is of value, even if we're going out, you know, and that's just my personal belief and part of the way I'm practicing with it. Mm-hmm.
That's nice. Thank you. Appreciate that. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you so much. This is, we're living in complex and tender times.
You touched on a lot of wonderful things, actually. Yeah. So thank you.
Thank you, Shelley. Yeah, it's, you know, this is not a one-time exploration or conversation. It's really, you know, that inquiry of what is eco-dharma? What is it? What could it be? How could it serve? What is it for me? And I know that that's constantly evolving in my own practice and awareness, and you know, and I surf the waves of heartbreak and hopelessness and profound appreciation moment to moment, day by day, year by year, you know.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.